Hello and welcome to Tune In 2022. This is the reading for Capricorn Sun, Capricorn Rising, and Capricorn Moon. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer, for the next hour or so, here with my best effort at a look at the astrology of 2022 and a bit beyond. We will be working in a few different sections in this reading to make the material digestible, and I am going to do my best to break this down in the simplest and most elegant possible way. To begin with, it will probably not surprise you that most of the really intense astrology that we have been living under has its origins in the sign Capricorn. It is currently one of the four most active signs, although the events that precipitate the current era of world history emerge from events in Capricorn that span back to 2008 and have a major point of focus or of reckoning in early 2020. And there are certain events in astrology that end up as what you might think of as permanent waveforms, as standing waves. I think of them as being, that's a feature in the rapids of a river or stream. And it is where there is an energy pattern that holds itself there, that anything that passes by it must encounter. And what has been driving all of this in much of the, let's say, radical transformations of society that we have witnessed in the past 14 years involve events in Capricorn. And if we go back to the 9/11 incident of 2001, that involves the ruling planet of Capricorn and also Pluto, so a Saturn-Pluto event. And I think of that as being the major turning point that has led to where we are today. And all of this involves Saturn, and it involves Capricorn. And if the events are over the top and intense in public, you can imagine what they are for you privately. Of course, you can't imagine that because you've been living through them. And what we are in now is approximately the last, well, we are in the last full year of Pluto in Capricorn. The first full year was 09. The first mixed year of Sag Cap was 08. So the last full year of Pluto in Cap will be 22, and then there'll be a mixed year in 23 of Aquarius and Capricorn. And all of this is life-shaping for you. Now, we are at the very, very end of Pluto and Capricorn, therefore. And so it is time to review and also to do what you can to tie up the loose ends associated with the growth process associated with Pluto. And the thing is that these are never neat and tidy. They are always a little bit messy. Growth is not like spending a weekend at the Omega Institute with brown rice and tofu served three meals a day, but rather can be unpredictable, wrenching, and all of that along the way to being transformative. And yet, when I think of Pluto, I think of the idea of Martha Lang Westcott, which is that at first, when Pluto is a factor in your chart, it can seem very difficult and challenging. And then after a while, you start to depend upon this constant push energy that Pluto is providing, a quality of mandating your progress and your attention to certain issues. And then when Pluto is gone, you will miss it. And so Pluto is soon to be gone from your sign. We'll enter another realm of your chart, the second house, which is something of an abstraction of the first house. The first is about who you are and your sense of being and your sense of self and your sense of identity. And the second house is an abstract of that in that it transforms that into ideals, values, self-worth, and your personal assets. So that's where Pluto is going. And I will touch on those points because Saturn is already in this second place, which is, an abstraction of the first place being sense of self, and then your actual physical body, how you look to the world, how you think you appear to the world, and your sense of your inner being. And then the second house or place is more like a window into your self-esteem, self-respect, and what you do with the assets that you have. And both of these houses are under rather profound transits, and have been going well back to the spring of 2020. So it's been one of those eras of everything all at once. There have been a couple of others of those. For example, the 2011-2012 era had a similar feeling to it. But let's take a look at what's going on in your first house. First place, as I sometimes call it, place, house, solar house, all the same in this form of astrology. And the overarching message here is that your ancestors are trying to communicate with you. In the West, we don't really honor the ancestors. My friend Lanvi is Vietnamese and sent me photos of beautiful place settings in her family where they honor their Vietnamese tradition, their Buddhist tradition, and on the day of the full moon, they set a table and invited the living relatives and the dead relatives to be there and honored the people who came before them. And we in the West live almost completely detached from the contributions that they've made, though most of us seem to have one ancestor that we love, usually an aunt or a grandmother or an uncle or a grandfather who we identify with and feel that we take after. Your chart expands this idea quite a bit and encourages you to, first of all, reach back to your great-grandparents and make contact with them by name and to remember everything that you can remember about all of those people. See if you can name as many as you can. Ask your parents if they're still alive and maybe sketch out a quick family tree on both sides of your family going back to the era of your great-grandparents. And that's one little, you might say, sub-theme. But there's something else that takes you back much, much further. Back past the point where you know the names of these individuals, past the point where you may even know where they were or have any concept of who they were, since this is the kind of stuff that for most people in the West anyway, exceeds the kind of thing you might find on Ancestry. And though I can't advocate turning over a sample of your DNA, there may be plenty that you can do without doing so. And if you have done so, I think you would find this to be a genuinely satisfying and spiritually fulfilling exercise to make contact in any way that you can. It's not necessarily like this will get you a date or a job or, you know, solve all of your problems, but I think that it may be a missing nutrient and help you orient yourself in a time of extreme destabilization, which is a term that we can apply to Pluto going through your sign and making conjunctions to either your sun, your moon, or your ascendant in the past, you know, 13, 14 years, or in the forthcoming year and a half. If you're born with very late Capricorn placements, you have yet to experience the full strength of Pluto, though you have experienced important parts of it. And this missing nutrient is likely to at least help you stabilize and get a better sense of the past and a sense of the passage of time in an era when the past and the passage of time are wildly distorted and all but forgotten. There's one last thing involving this small cluster of planets, which you can see at the very far left of the chart, beginning with a little X with a vertical through it, and then the QU and the P, Ixion, Quasar, and Pholus. The one that I haven't mentioned yet is Ixion. And Ixion is really about two things. It's about whether a person has morals and honors those morals more than in words. The story of Ixion is the story of amorality, having no personal code, and therefore not such wonderful boundaries, and the use of second chances. What is the situation in your life when you're given a second chance? Made a mistake of some kind, a transgression, an error of any kind. When you get a second chance, what do you do with that second chance? And when you assess that you need to make an improvement, do you do that? And I will suggest here that you are under some focused, perhaps even enforced growth when it comes to doing the right thing. This extends to all of your personal contracts. The fulfilling of commitments is a crucial element of growth. And this can include, under certain circumstances, asking to be released from commitments. But one way or the other, the debt, in a sense, that a commitment entails needs to either be fulfilled or forgiven. And the suggestion here is to avoid lingering deaths of all kind. Debt. Debts. Now, it's interesting. This does bring in the eighth house, which we'll get to. I'm commenting on these planets in the first, Ixion, Quasar, Pholus. But this leads naturally into a minor point called Varuna in your eighth, house associated with contracts and a potent little minor planet out in the realm of Pluto, a little bit further out, that is all about the maintenance and enforcement of contracts. And so this is serious business that you are being called upon to complete certain elements of your karma. And I would suggest that that also includes understanding that which is not your karma and being cautious and clear about that with yourself after careful assessment and knowing when to give things back to the ancestors. We are all dragging around many things. It is written in the Bible and other places, similar thought, that the sins of the father shall be passed on to the sons for seven generations. That's where the brand seventh generation gets its name from. And that, to me, strongly implies that much of what we're coping with is not the result of our own actions, choices, and karma, but rather the inherited material. And with this combination of factors in your sign, and with Varuna in the eighth, the question is, what are you doing with this inheritance, whether it is a what you might consider a positive inheritance or what you might consider a negative inheritance, something that you don't want, don't need, and don't deserve, but still there must be a closure around that. Because until you get clear with you might call the lords of karma, that this is not your business, it's going to remain your business and will have the effect of slowing you down. So, contracts, the completion of contracts, the fulfillment of contracts, the understanding of your personal moral code and what you do to honor and enforce that code, and then the exploration of ancestral legacy. Now, Pluto has been going through your first place for a long time, and Pluto tends to generate growth opportunities. And after 14 or so years of Pluto, well, we're coming up on year 14. After, you know, 13-ish years of Pluto moving through your sign, you certainly had no shortage of growth opportunities. And that's a polite way to say enforced growth, because that's what Pluto does. And it is probable that the events of 2020 shook you to the core, and that you were one of the people who internalized those events the most and was potentially also the most distracted by other types of events that distracted you from what was going on in the world around you. Now, this is going to be a big year for Pluto in Capricorn. Now, 2020 was a very big year for Pluto in Capricorn. That is because there was the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto around the 12th of January, and the first of seven squares of Pluto and Eris starting around the 23rd of January 2020, that lasted all the way through the autumn of 2021. Those events are behind us, though all outer planet events leave a mark. They become a standing wave. However, there's an interesting little revelation in 2022, and it is underway now. I'm recording on the 20th, a little bit ahead of the Capricorn solstice. And that is that Venus is stationing retrograde. It did actually yesterday station retrograde in a conjunction to Pluto. And so there is a series of, not the asteroid series, but a world series of conjunctions between Venus and Pluto. And this has a specific delineation that I came up with over breakfast. It just dawned on me what this really is about. But first, the emotional side of this may be very deep and challenging, because you've got this planet associated with your intimate inner reality, your creativity, your goals in life, located in your sign. Those are the meanings of Venus for you, by the way. They mean different things for different people. Making this series of conjunctions to Pluto. And so this is saying that something, some crucial elements of your life are under a radical and total transformation, to the point where you may feel like you are molting or transforming metamorphically into an entirely new form. Though this is likely to be a feeling that has tracked you somewhat thoroughly for the past 13 years that Pluto's been in your sign, because there keep being these events that provoke the power of Pluto. But now we're in this very interesting year where, first of all, Venus is making this series of conjunctions to Pluto. And there's something here about what I would describe as a retrieval of your most cherished intentions, your sense of responsibility, and your sense of creative adventure. And all of these things can add up to, this is what my life is about. But there is also the emotional transformation process that is likely to leave you feeling wide open and very vulnerable, as if you do not any longer have a case or a shell that you can carry around, but rather that you are in your fully exposed state, including exposed to yourself. And the purpose of this, I think, is to reach deep into your history and find something that you have left behind, that you have left there that you need, something that is entirely your own. And life is like this, you know, it is often that people find themselves in situations where they have to compromise an important goal for some reason, whether it's some cultural circumstance, you know, the financial shakeup at the time that Pluto arrived in your sign in 08, or you know, which shifted a lot of people's career goals. This proposed pandemic that we're calling it has shaken up people's lives and their goals. And you at least are in a position to find something valuable through this process. And there's one other thing that I noticed today, sitting in the Broadway Lights Diner. I got curious about the exact degree placements of the retrogrades of Mercury. And it turns out that not only does Venus, the planet of values and of feelings, and for you, accountability, it's this morph for you of accountability and creativity. It's a very interesting mix, blending properties of Taurus and Libra for you. But Mercury retrograde all make contact with Pluto throughout 2022. all of the Mercury retrogrades start in an air sign and retrograde back either into a trine or a conjunction to Pluto. And so every time an inner planet, well, Venus and Mercury, we'll see about Mars, but every time Venus or Mars go retrograde, what they are doing is evoking the Pluto principle and, in a sense, dispatching it to another place in your chart. So this will include where, well, the very next Mercury, the one that begins the year, takes place right in Capricorn. It starts in Aquarius and goes back into Capricorn. So it is working that hot spot in your chart between your sense of self and your assets, attitudes, values, and self-respect. And then the next one happens in the spring in Taurus in a trine to Pluto, which is, I think, designed to open the way to what you would consider your creative expression, which I would say you can safely call it that if you are experimenting. They're always, for you in this time of your life, what creative means is the space to experiment, followed by a retrograde in the autumn, which takes place in Virgo, which sign I'm eager to read a little bit later in this reading, which is your house of spirituality. And in the case of Taurus and Virgo, the Mercury retrogrades hook a trine to Pluto right at the end of the process. When they land in the Earth sign and station direct in the Earth sign, that is always in a series of aspects to Pluto. In the case of Mercury, conjunct, conjunct, conjunct. In the case of Taurus, trine, 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 three. In the case of Virgo, trine, trine, trine. So that is a lot of inner planet connection to Pluto, and it spreads the energy into crucial areas of your chart, and it reminds you of the growth that you have been through. It is calling on you to take that growth and claim it and apply it and deliver it to different facets of your life, which all seem to involve the way that you express yourself in an experimental and creative way, which includes sexually and spiritually, because for you, Taurus represents the creative, essentially the creative and sexual game of life, and Virgo represents a spiritual experience lifelong, which to you may feel more like a psychological experience. And for some, it's going to feel like your relationship to nature. It does not necessarily feel specifically like, you know, angel singing, or, you know, the spiritual bookstore with the incense burning and all the yoga books, but rather a psychological process. And I'm going to refer back to a work called The Starseed Transmissions, which describes this psychological process, and then the creative process, and then the self-actualization process of all the events in Capricorn. This is likely to be a very rich time in your life, and one where you finally get some relief from the what I will call the potentially overbearing, excruciating, enforced changes of 2020 and 2021. There is a kind of energetic opening that will spread into the different areas of your life. And perhaps the best is this opening up of a portal into the deep and distant past of your ancestors. And though I have one more thing to say about that, we're coming up on a short intermission, and I will begin with your the second section with your relationship to the land and the people who inhabit the land. You're listening to the sound of Jupiter. Yours is an earth sign. It is an unusual earth sign because, first of all, it is ruled by a mythological critter. Though I don't remember the whole story of the myth, I have my own theory of why there is a sea goat in Capricorn. I think of Capricorn as being associated with the place where mountains meet ocean. Mountains will do. Mountains meet glacier. Mountains meet streams. Mountains meet waterfalls. But it is the rugged and mountainous terrain of the earth that is, I think, the purview of Capricorn, including things like canyons. So it's the wild earth and the natural geological features of the earth, where, for example, Taurus is more about the beautiful things we make from the earth, pottery and, you know, things hewn of wood and even of metal. And Virgo is about what we cultivate and grow from the earth or gather from the earth and in previous times, and generally about the part of the earth that's constantly being modified by life itself, rather than, for example, the elements. Capricorn is, again, an earth sign, and I think that the many deep transits to Pluto in Capricorn are encouraging you to, number one, get as close to the earth as you can, as much as you can, and see if you can make one journey somewhere this year, preferably sooner. Maybe depending on when you are available, you can do it prior to tourists going places and get to any place where mountains meet ocean. But the other thing about the land is that the land contains spirits. It contains the spirits of all the natural entities, the rocks and the crystals and the plants and the trees, and it also contains the spirits of the ancestors who continue to occupy the land after they have moved on from physical form. And with so much happening in the way of the ancestral realm, there is a wonderful opportunity for you to ground and connect to these ancient spirits by touching the earth. And what is so wonderful is that this spreads into the other Earth signs. And so, you may have your, let's say, proposed trip to where mountains meet ocean or some such. And then the part of the Earth that is about celebrating the beautiful things we make of it and all of that, you know, stuff that goes beyond beaver dams. Basically, they're cool. But, cherry panel things are different than that. So celebrating your abundance in terms of things created naturally. And then we have the Virgo retrograde of Mercury. Libra into Virgo. And this is about what you eat. It is about your spiritual connection to the land. It is about knowing the people who grow your food as best as you possibly can. And then let's go around one more time. Another set of references to the retrogrades of Mercury, air, to Earth. There's a different pattern every year, and this year the pattern is air to Earth. And for Capricorn, I'm in love with it because both Mercury and Venus are looping around Pluto all the time, and I think that this is your moment to claim what you have learned. You have been through so much in the past decade and a half, and at a certain point, you have to collect the wisdom and in a sense, the wealth and spiritual wealth and the practical worldly knowledge of which the Earth signs are a beautiful collecting point. With the forthcoming Capricorn retrograde and the ongoing Venus retrograde, this really is about a reassessment of who you have become. And I think that much of the completion of unfinished business associated with the Aquarius Capricorn retrograde of Mercury is going to be about fully owning the results of your growth. The second thing, as we move into the Taurus, the Gemini Taurus retrograde, is about claiming the power you have to make things, and also exploring the line where your creative self, the creative self, meaning the one that really can indulge the beauty of what you make, and the originality of what you make, which is so important right now with Uranus going through Taurus. And by the way, that that second Mercury retrograde of the year begins in, well, it involves a, where is the square to Taurus? I've got that in my notes somewhere. But that that Uranus in Taurus is going to be activated by these by one of these Mercury retrogrades as well. And in the very first one of the year, that's the one coming up in January. And it begins with a square to Saturn and conjunction to Saturn and a square to Uranus. And so it is activating this experimental part of your nature. And then what Mercury does is in a later retrograde is it starts to weave together the work that you do daily and the beauty and creativity and experimental and risk-taking element. And I've heard Capricorn describe itself as just, plodding steadily through everything and, muddling along and all that stuff. Well, there's something about you that is very different from that, and which is happiest in work environments that are mercurial, where there's much that is changing, where it is more open and lighter and breezy. And yes, it's possible to get distracted in that environment, but you know, because it's like it's chatty and all of that stuff. But what I'm really talking about is your mental environment of work needs to be a place where there are where things move quickly rather than being stable all the time every day, or being of the nature of mountains, which most certainly do thrust up from the earth, but you know it only takes hundreds of millions of years. You need an environment where there's some speed and movement and a chance to stretch into the different sides of your nature, right? That's really one of the key elements of anything involving Gemini, and this is your sixth house placement. I would add, by the way, that the health component of that, the sixth has a health component, and the health component there is saying that your mental state is crucial to your health. But more than that, your mental state needs to be more grounded in things of a tangible nature, because the retrograde goes from Gemini into Taurus, and so it is always happening that the air sign event becomes an earth sign event, and so it's really about contact with the ground and going downward, and then aspiring from the foundation of contact with the ground. And here again, with the Taurus contact and Uranus and Taurus, is allowing yourself to be more childlike and experimental than you normally are. Now, the retrograde in the autumn is particularly interesting because it starts in your 10th place. It starts essentially on the midheaven of your whole sign or solar house chart, and it fully activates your 10th. So now's a good time to talk about what's going on in your 10th house and bring that back into the 9th house where the retrograde ends. And this will span from September 10 to October 2nd. So you have Libra on your 10th place. Capricorn is so often described as a sign associated with ambition and aspiration, and when we reckon that, it is interesting to see that Libra is the sign on your house of aspiration and ambition and also accountability. And there's something with you that's very harmonious with Libra, because Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, but Libra has Saturn exalted. And so you have one planet that spins together who you are personally and then what you aspire to and need to aspire to in terms of success and your sense of responsibility and your role in the world. And Mercury is going to activate this. And I've been keeping a really close eye on Libra lately because of two placements in there, one of which is a long-term visitor called Logos, and one of which is a permanent thing, a fixed star called M87. It's really a galaxy and the largest of the supermassive black holes anywhere near us. It's sometimes been called the supergalactic center. That's not really true, but It has been revered to that point, and this is particularly in our era of history, which you might call the modern era, spanning back, you know, to maybe around the time of the French and American Revolutions, a thing that is a kind of a massive gravitational beacon, saying that the direction to go is upward. So when you take a thing that's something like a trillion times the sun, think about that, right? The sun is really important in the chart. Chiron, which is only 180 kilometers, is really important. Then imagine a thing that is a trillion times the sun. That's a ridiculously large galaxy. And that is parked at the very top of your chart. And so it can manifest in the form of shadowy, dark ambition, but then it can have a way of transforming into being a source of regeneration, self-determination, self-completion. And what this is saying to me is you must be your own authority. You must be the person who lives by the rules that you set. We're referencing a bit of Ixion here, where you have the personal code that you live by as your kind of, you might say, rules of travel. And this confers you with tremendous influence and authority in the world, much of which you can manifest through something that's never really said about Capricorn, but it is so true, which is your love of beauty. I mean, Capricorn must be the second most maligned sign of the zodiac. Number one being Scorpio, but then Capricorn gets this bad rap for being so allegedly so ambitious all the time, right? But it's not quite as bad as Eric Cartman in South Park. Not sure if you're a South Park fan, but the thing with Cartman is he's a little whacked, and he could easily be a Capricorn, but he's always got a plan. He's the one who drives everything forward. He's the one who wants to start the business and the football team and the fast food joint and the all that. So you have that. But when you fuse this with your love of beauty and balance, beauty and balance, in particular of the male-female polarity, the yin-yang polarity, the awa-sanuki polarity, however you want to think of it, you really can get results. And I think this is one of the reasons why we might ascribe to Libra being the human blowtorch, where you can turn your power way down, where you can turn your power way up, and that is an M87 thing. I will post something about M87 to the resources page. Then there is Logos moving through Libra, and this has been, I think, a saving influence in our intellectually troubled times, in our times where it is commonplace for people to confuse what they believe with what is actually true. And the assumption that many people make is, if I believe it, it's actually true. Well, Logos doesn't go there. Logos doesn't want that. Logos wants a sensible, explainable in language, structurable set of reasoned out principles, which can't always be attained on our planet. However, they sometimes can be, and it is worth aspiring to. And I think that the one exercise for you is to aspire to make sense. Mercury highlighting these things as it moves through in the later part of September, mid to late September, going through Libra, is going to perk you up and remind you that these influences are there. And it is a good time to teach and learn, and also to see the harmony of things, but also to use the power of your mind to make that harmony. Not to force it, but to make that harmony. Now, this retrograde goes into Virgo, and what this reminds me of is that for, I think, a lot of strong Capricorn types, spirituality comes with a very strong dose of self-criticism. And this is so natural to you that you might not even notice it. And this is enhanced by a couple of added points in Virgo, one of which is Orcus, a Pluto-like, a very close Plutino. In other words, it's very close to Pluto's orbit and same resonance to Neptune. It's almost like an alternate Pluto. That's a long-term visitor. And it's not the happiest influence, and it can turn Virgo into something a little self-captive. And then there's the influence of a point called Trans-Pluto. And Trans-Pluto also has a reputation for being self-critical. And, let's just say self-critical. And I'm here to remind you that there's more to a spiritual path or a therapy path or a healing path than that form of being self-critical, which has its place. But I would, encourage a more natural, earthy and grounded spirituality. One last thought on the spiritual theme, also from the mutable signs. And by the way, I have addressed many of these placements generally in a series of three videos that you can watch that I think might enhance your experience. One of the deepest comments about Capricorn spirituality is, meaning your cosmology, your sense of your relationship to it all, your sense of your origins, your sense of what is true, and your sense of God, come from Sagittarius in the 12th house. The 12th is the most numinous of the houses, the most mysterious. It's the one that's all around us all the time, as Sting says, tugging at your hand. It would seem to be invisible until there are events that make it manifest in some way. And to have this house on your 12th, to have Sag on your 12th, is to have a phenomenally expanded idea of your concept of the universe, again, in contradiction to all that we're told Capricorn is supposed to be, right? You can show me 100 astrology textbooks, and I bet you'll never see anyone say, this sign contains the cosmos, this sign has an inherent, intuitive, inborn understanding of the nature of the widest reality. That's what it means to have Sagittarius on your 12th house. And that 12th house contains two other fixed points, the Great Attractor and the Galactic Center, which take us first to the center of our own galaxy and then to the center of our supergalactic cluster, the actual supergalactic cluster called Laniakea, or the Great Attractor. I'm always putting videos and audios and interviews and stuff up associated with Sagittarius. It'll be pretty easy to find. And I can also help by making a note to myself to putting the Lania Kea stuff on the resource page for you. Lania Kea. Okay, so there you have that. And so what I'm getting at here is that when we talk about spirituality, this goes way beyond psychology for you. It goes way beyond ordinary mysticism for you. It is about what you contain through which you can access anything. And I realize it's not easy to feel this all the time, but I think that it will whisper to you. And there has recently been an eclipse on December 4th in this region of your chart. Okay, so what I'd like to talk about with the rest of the time in this section, and we'll maybe have a little extra for a few other things, but this, if we get here, we'll be doing great, are houses 2, 3, and 4. We've covered most of the other houses, I think, though we haven't really covered 11 yet. One of the interesting properties of Capricorn is that House 1 and House 2 are both ruled by Saturn. And so there is something that is Saturnian and also woven together between you, your self-concept, your experience of yourself and your body, and how you feel about yourself, you know, whether you respect yourself and hold yourself in esteem. That's the second house. And straight away, before we get to any planets, and there's a couple involved, what I would caution about for anyone with a strong Capricorn signature is the extent to which you may feel that how you feel about yourself is something that is subject to public debate in some way, or that is subject to a consensus view of your friends, or something that is subject to a review by anyone, most particularly multiple people, or some cultural factor or trend. This has been particularly strong in 2021. You're thankfully, in some ways, moving on from this. But the world doesn't get to take a vote about whether you should feel good about yourself. There's no judge and jury deciding your value. Your value is something that you decide. And what you are likely to find is that your deepest value comes from emerging from the group consensus and standing apart from what is popular, what is trendy, and what is imposed. And this is, in some ways, the revolutionary streak in Capricorn. One thing I've noticed is that people who are really good revolutionaries almost all have a strong Capricorn signature. And I've always ascribed that to being able to, or the necessity to honor tradition and the past in order to be able to change it. And so with Aquarius on the second, you could go either way. You could succumb to the past, or you could say, all right, it's time to morph and evolve this tradition. And there's a number of cultures on Earth where there's been a massive diaspora, for example, the Jews, whose expertise is to keep tradition alive by evolving it. Rabbi, shamanic teacher Arthur Joseph Kushner said, any tradition that does not grow, change, and evolve is a dead tradition. And so tradition needs to be alive to be meaningful. And for you, there is something here of a genuine tradition of dissent. You understand the argument for the conservative, preserve, conserve, reserve, and all that serving stuff. And then the need to being sensitive to group consensus, be able to step out of the group consensus and stand on your own. And it may be true in some ways that to go along with the group consensus provides you with a sense of camaraderie and companionship, but also I would caution that it has the ability to really take you out of yourself and out of your needs and your, you got to make up your own mind about stuff. And it's easy for a number of reasons to succumb to others making up your mind. We'll get there when we get to house number four. There's this connection between Aquarius and Aries I'm constantly bumping into or like rediscovering in almost every chart. And I'll get there after we talk about Saturn going through Aquarius. Well, you've had a year of Jupiter going through Aquarius. That has not been all that helpful, though it may have either helped you prosper in 2021 or help you stem losses in 2021. So Jupiter's moving on. We'll come to that in a moment. But Saturn remains in Aquarius. And this, I think, is, while some will experience it as the pressure to conform, others will experience it as the inner fortitude to not conform. And it certainly does take inner fortitude to not conform. It builds inner fortitude. It will help you actualize yourself, and it's fair to say that you do plenty of your self-actualization in Aquarius, which is your house of self-respect, self-esteem, the tools of your trade, the your movable possessions. Now, one thing that we can say is a positive for Aquarius is that you have a sense of the, let's say, the community chest. Not the cutest cheerleader, but rather the community wealth, the treasury, being a thing that is essential, the economy of scale, the consolidation of resources. It certainly makes sense for every family in a community to give a portion of its personal wealth so that the entire community can have things that would not ever be available. In other words, every person can have their own fire department, but it makes among the few things that government makes sense to have is it makes perfect sense to have a fire department. But we all chip in a little bit, and just in case there's a fire, there's some fire trucks that'll come now. This is something that you understand completely, and there's many permutations of this, and what you have with Aquarius on the second, first of all, is that natural responsibility that would allow you to be the treasurer and a keen sense of where personal wealth merges with community wealth, and a sense of responsibility when it comes to making sure that you contribute to community wealth, but that you also benefit from it. Now, Pluto is coming. I haven't given a whole think through on Pluto in the second house, but in general, I have found this to really drive a sense of autonomy and a sense of deep personal responsibility and the need to be independent of things. Now, we put this in Aquarius, and we're in interesting territory, and we are entering interesting territory economically as this whole pandemic drama becomes a thousand things that it did not start as. And one of them is likely to be an ongoing series of financial rearrangements. And this is suggesting that you need to become a bit of an island, a bit of an autonomous force. And part of why you're going to be that autonomous force is to make sure that you can serve as a personal community treasury to make sure that the things you recognize as needing to happen actually can happen. You may not be able to make them happen entirely. However, the next long phase of your life, talking almost 20 years of Pluto in Aquarius, are about holding together the place where personal wealth meets community wealth, but with you as a steward, almost of a kind of a villa. Right. Okay, let's take a look at Pisces. Now, Now, this is I think a really trippy placement for Capricorn to have Pisces on house three. And it's placements like this to make me want to write a sun sign book, which we haven't had really a really good one since Linda Goodman. But try this on. So having Pisces on the third means you are really a creature of your imagination, that your mind is a fertile field of the imagination, and that your, let's say, resting position of thought is one of profound empathy and of loving where you are. You need to love where you are. If you're somewhere where you don't love it, you should move on. But loving where you are and wanting to take care of all the critters. And then the third has a function of your mental and communication environment. And it is not that easy having Pisces as part of your mental and communication environment. However, it is beautiful if you get that going and you begin to work that, though there are a number of influences, one of them very long-standing, Neptune, which can fuel your imagination but make it difficult to focus your imagination and actually express yourself. The second influence is Nessus. Now, what Nessus does is it introduces a sense of consequences and of karma and of what you might think of as circular paths or of things returning to their origin. And this is a somewhat dark influence in that it may have you pissed off about a lot of things that you see happening and wanting there to be wanting people to get their comeuppance and wanting justice to be served. And wanting honesty and wanting to, you know, clarify and purify what is in so many ways a toxic and noxious, experience of the collective mental environment. Pisces is perhaps the easiest sign to corrupt because it is so permeable and so trusting and so gullible. And while it does not need to be that way, its discrimination power and its shrewdness and its sensitivity to truth need to be cultivated, trained, and maintained. You know, you've got to get in that time of real training of your discrimination and your ability to tell what from what else. Now, Jupiter entering this is going to bring that's the 28th, 29th of this year, and then on and off through much of 2022, a flood of presence in Pisces. It is going to be up to you to focus that. And now, you know, it's going to be both rulers of Pisces in Pisces, the modern quote-unquote ruler Neptune and the classical ruler Jupiter. And so, you know, how might you do that? Well, I'm going to say follow Mercury. Mercury is the opposite planet of Pisces, but if you follow Mercury, you are at least following an expressive, mentally focused influence that's going to have a lot of opportunity to grasp a hold of things, and by making aspects to Pluto that are going to point the way toward growth, and I think very importantly, the Venus connection to the repeated Venus connection to Pluto is going to help you clarify your goals. And so the third house in itself is not lending itself to much clarity with Nessus, Jupiter and Neptune there. There are going to be lots of transits passing through. Mars makes a very important appearance in Pisces later in the year. So there'll be opportunities. And when that occurs, let's get the 411 on that. I did an analysis of that in the Aries reading. But let's say that it's when Mars arrives in Pisces is going to be coming right up in April, and it's there with Venus. There is the sensation of a burning driving force and potentially anger and very steamy, intense desire. So what the third in Pisces is doing is providing you with this big kettle of inspiration and ideas and fermentation to work with. And it's going to be this very interesting brew, particularly in the spring, as there's this mass gathering and there's the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction with Venus and Mars right around there. So what this is suggesting to me, though, is to export your inner inspiration. So, you know, the third might have you like sitting at your desk staring out the window. But what I'm seeing about the third at this point in your life is that you go to the scene of things, and that is where you will find the most abundant opportunities to explain and describe. And this explaining and describing will be very helpful for you. Even something like a journal where you just write the weather every day. And you'll see that sooner or later, the journal that begins with the morning weather report, you know, you might put a thermometer out your window or something, or just stick your head out, sniff around, walk around the block or whatever it is and say, today it's sunny, today it's cloudy, today it reminds me of when I was 10 years old living in Minneapolis. Will be an interesting and exciting writing exercise. And I think that generally writing, journaling, morning pages type of journaling is going to be very beneficial for you. All right, fourth house, finally. So here's one of the linchpins of all of Capricorn, and that is where the placement of Aries is in your chart. The placement of Aries is in your fourth house. This is the house of security. So what this is suggesting is that the concept of Capricorn is very much associated with finding grounding, stability, and security. Now, that's not always a helpful way to live, but for you, it is a way to live, and it in some way must be part of your repertoire. The catch there is that the fourth is so closely affiliated with family. And here's another one of those zones in your chart where you can find yourself being, in a sense, having your sense of safety and your sense of belonging being assimilated by or feeling like you need to conform to the ideas that other people have about you. Now, this would all be well and good, except that Chiron is there, and Chiron is another one of those influences, similar to Saturn in Aquarius. Chiron is a even more potent influence, saying that it is time to stand out and stand apart, and more than anything, to define your own sense of belonging, to define your own sense of safety and security, which might have absolutely nothing to do with what your immediate parents and grandparents have thought, which is one reason you want to go back to the ancestral realm. By the way, in my conversation with Melanie Reinhardt about the centaurs in Saturn and Pluto in 2022, we talk about the ancestral nature of all of the centaurs. And so Chiron is there, and what Chiron is urging you to do is to stand apart from familial influences, to aspire to your own ideas of what is right for you, and to challenge the ideas that have been given to you by your family about what is right for you, what is necessary for you, and what safety is, right? I mean, when I was younger, my dad was telling me to go work for the post office so I would have, you know, job security and health insurance. He does actually understand me better than that, but not everyone gets to the point where A, they assert their individuality against their family, and then they also can say, well, my family does actually understand me better than thinking I might be some kind of person suitable to work in the post office. The the nature of Aries is to assert yourself. The nature of the fourth is to be subsumed into the family's idea of safety. This could potentially work together, providing the kind of mental emotional environment for a Capricorn that wants things to be stable and wants to be approved of, but it's equally capable of stepping out and recognizing, well, that worked for a while. It's not really me. It's not really what I'm about. And you got to do your thing. And Chiron is absolutely helping you, though it may feel a little bit itchy and scratchy and inconvenient to do this. And you may wonder if you're going to be accepted and approved of by those people around you. And there comes that point where you have to not care. You have to reach that point where your self-determination is more important than what you think people think. And you don't really know that people think this either. They may have thought it at one time. They may have thought it and been wrong. They may have not thought it at all. But there's this concept of what we think people think. And for you, it's affecting you very strongly out of your second Aquarius, the group consensus on your self-esteem, and Aries fourth, thinking that you're better off, you're safer if your family signs off on all the things that you think are supposed to make you feel good and feel better and feel safe and represent your form of grounding. And they may all be made uncomfortable by the fact that you're a self-assertive individual and you have your way of seeing the world and doing things, and you want to live in the house that you want to live in, not necessarily any version of the family estate. One last bit. There's a point called Apollon. I'm sure that only about three astrologers still use it. It is a hypothetical point. I have always used these points, but I'm gradually ever more falling in love with them. Apollon is in your 11th house. It is a super Jupiter. It is almost a combination of Jupiter and Gemini. And it is in Scorpio, and it is in your house of the collective, your house of your friends, your associations, any event that you are at where you know people at the event, any event you're at where you don't know people at the event, we might think of more of as a 12th house thing. Like, let's say, for example, you go to a Yankee game alone, you don't see one person, you know, okay, that's not very 11th house. But if you go to a conference, a party, an organization, any place where there are friends and friends of friends and friends of friends of friends, not on Facebook, is the 11th house. And what this is suggesting is that you are your own beacon for a kind of gathering. And that the gathering, because you are in very deep territory, needs to be a gathering of other people in deep territory so that you have some companionship, specifically when it comes to being in deep territory. This is an altogether beautiful thing because it takes all of this radically transformational energy in your chart, and it says, and now we'll have dinner on Sunday, and all you other fucking weirdos can come over, and we'll crack open the cider or the homebrew or an ounce of homegrown indica, whatever it may be, and the best dinner in the world, and let's be weird together. So you get to be that person who says, let's be weird together. What better person than a Capricorn, who may be perceived as being perfectly normal, to be the one who convenes the freak potluck dinner where all those two who are outcast in some way, all those two who are in some way alienated, all those two who are consciously coming to the point where they have to make a decision not to conform, because that's just the way their dharma is pointing, people are looking up to you. People are looking to you for leadership. Keep a positive attitude and remember that you, through your very existence, send a message to the world. On that note, I leave you. I trust you may have access to your rising sign. If you do not get it, We'll send out a discount. If you cannot afford it, just write to me. I will send it to you because everyone should hear their rising sign as well. And that gives it between the sun and the rising, you get a really good original composite of what's going on. Cap Moon is one of the most unusual and beautiful lunar placements. And I will try to add, remind me if I haven't, an article called The Emperor's Full Moon, my treatise on the Capricorn Moon to the resources page. All right, once again, thank you for your trust, for your time, and for your business. You know where to find me. Signing off from Kingston, New York at 1:51 p.m. on December 20th. Bye for now.